This is Falcon Radio. I am Maddox, and I'm joined by Tariq.
Hello.
And today we have a special guest once again on Falcon Radio. He's a Fulton alumni, Jed McKeon from McKeon Law Group. And Jed, since the last time we've spoken, it's been a while. How have you been?
Doing well. Very busy with the law.
Yeah, that's good. I'm glad to hear that you're busy. And my first question to start it off is, I'm just kind of curious, how often are you involved in a juvenile case?
Fairly frequently. There are a couple of different kinds of ways that juvenile cases come about. So there are two aspects. One is when a juvenile is charged with an offense or they've been missing a lot of school. And then the juvenile will have court themselves for committing a crime or for missing school and going to truancy court. The other aspect of it is people can go to court, to juvenile court, typically on custody cases. When two people who are unmarried have a custody case, they can go to juvenile court to determine custody of a child. They can also deal with child support cases down there. But for you all in this room, Tariq and Maddox and the other people in here, you all are juveniles. Your exposure to juvenile court would be if you smash somebody's mailbox or something like that, you might get picked up by the law enforcement and have to go to criminal court in juvenile court.
Okay, so speaking on juvenile court, a question about that. If you have a criminal offense and you get into something like that, what are the charges that you could be placed upon that are under, like, adult charges?
Okay, good question. So lots of people, well, not let's not say lots of people. Some people know that you kind of get a free pass if you commit crimes before you turn 18. You're not an adult. Your juvenile record is sealed forever. Once you turn 18, they can't bring it up. However, we see more and more cases where juveniles are being charged as an adult. For example, if you shoot someone and kill them, that's a very serious offense, okay? You are more likely than not going to get charged and treated as an adult, okay? Now, lower level offenses like joyriding, driving without a license when you're a juvenile, or, you know, something like destroying property or trespassing or shoplifting. Charges in our head we kind of think of as juvenile charges. You will more likely than not stay in juvenile court.
So would that mean that you would be on probation instead of being incarcerated or something like that?
So typically, the short answer is yes. Typically, juveniles do not spend extended period of time in jail or prison. There is a detention facility in Knox County where, candidly, they keep people longer, juveniles longer than they do in most other counties. But that is typically for a shorter period of time, days or weeks, not months and months. And typically, when you're charged with these kind of offenses, we're talking about trespassing, things like that, you're more likely than not going to be on probation through the juvenile court system. You're not going to likely to spend any time in jail. Now, murdering someone, you're likely going to be in prison for a long time.
So the intermediate charges like assault charges and domestic assault charges, what's that?
Excellent question. So a domestic assault is a misdemeanor charge, okay? And so we have two levels, felonies, which are really bad charges. Typically, if you're an adult, you face more than a year in prison. Misdemeanors are less than a year. And so an assault is actually a misdemeanor charge, but it seems more serious than trespassing, right? Mm-hmm. And so when we think about that, it kind of depends on the situation, all right? Lots of times we see young, angry men who get in a fist fight with their dad, okay? They may spend a little bit, a day or two in the detention facility, but not that long. But if it's a recurring theme where they keep fighting people or keep, you know, getting in fights at school, theoretically, they may spend a longer period of time in there, okay? So to answer your question, it kind of depends. I don't mean to waffle, and that's the normal thing lawyers do, but it kind of depends on each person's situation. A first-time assault, probably not going to be in trouble for that long. If it's like your third or fourth, you're going to have problems.
That's good to know. Thank you for that information.
Okay, and then kind of shifting gears, moving to a different topic. A big kind of discussion in the news lately has been pardons, presidential pardons. Can you just kind of explain what those are?
All right. So pardons are something you never want to have to get, okay? Because that means you're in trouble or you're about to be in big trouble, okay? And the president is a federal position, okay? We think about state court and federal courts, okay? We have a state governor. We have a federal president. The president can only pardon federal offenses. So like an assault, he can't pardon that because you're being charged by the state of Tennessee, and specifically Knox County is where we are. President Trump can't pardon those charges because he does not, he's not in control of state courts, okay? That's why he can't pardon himself on the state court charges that he has up in New York, okay? It only applies to federal court. So we're seeing lots of pardons now. He's writing them out for, you know, all these different people. He's pardoned all the rioters from January 6th. He, you know, President Biden on his way out pardoned his kids, his son Hunter Biden, who had been charged with some federal offenses. They're only able to do that with federal offenses. And candidly, most of us will never have to deal with federal charges ever. Murder is not a federal charge, okay? Most federal charges typically involve like selling drugs across state borders or, you know, some sort of gun-related charge that, you know, is buying and selling of guns. An assault is a state charge. So a pardon is something that the president can do on federal charges, and he can even do it for things potentially in the future, is what it sounds like. He's pardoning himself potentially for anything he does on his way out, as well as President Biden did, but that wouldn't apply to state charges.
So the federal charges are including like wire fraud and big things like scamming things like huge companies and stuff like that.
Correct. Okay, so I don't really do any federal criminal work because it's not very common, okay? It takes a long time to build those up. The Knox County Sheriff's Office are never going to charge anybody with a federal offense. Only FBI agents or the DEA or some other entities that have like three letters always are going to charge federal offenses. One unique exception to that is if you guys decided to get drunk driving in the national park, well, guess what? That's on federal property. That's not in a specific state jurisdiction. So that is actually a federal charge, kind of a weird situation. But if you are caught, you know, public intoxication up in the Smokies and they arrest you up there, you have to go to federal court for that because the national park is a federal facility. Kind of weird.
It's pretty interesting to think about because I want to understand why the president has been pardoning a bunch of people now.
Well, you would have to ask him, brother. But I would tell you that I don't know why he's pardoning people. It seems to me that more so than not, people are just angry a lot. And they want to fight about everything. And so we have two political parties, Republicans and the Democrats. And now they feel the need when they're in charge to just be angry at the other party. And so they try to undo things. And somehow that involves pardoning people who they believe have been punished by the other party. That's my take on it. Maybe I'm completely wrong, but that seems like what's going on, at least during this exchange of power.
I want to kind of go back to your last point about, you know, knowing that if you get arrested in the Smoky Mountains or on a national park, you know, that's a federal crime. How can somebody like us, our age, know stuff like that about the law and, you know, just kind of have that in the back of their mind where there are places like that or, you know, be aware of their surroundings?
Okay. Hard to do. All right. So that is not something that was on my radar when I was in high school. You know, I went around and lived my life, okay? I don't know that my parents even told me, hey, if you get pulled over for speeding, you need to get your driver's license and insurance out and be ready to hand them to the officer. That would have been helpful the first time I got my speeding ticket because you don't know that you maybe have to roll down the window and be polite to the officer and not try, you know, and turn off your car or don't get out of your car. These are all basic things that more likely than not, you're going to get caught for speeding, every one of us, at some point in our life, okay? There's not necessarily any reason to think, oh, I'm on a federal park. I need to be aware not to, you know, extra careful not to get arrested. It's just, you know, don't break the law would be a good idea. And then two, you know, be aware that when you're talking to law enforcement, they are not trying to let you explain your answer so that they can let you go. They are investigating so they can potentially arrest you. Okay, so I think I said this at the last time we talked. One, be as polite as humanly possible to them because they will remember if you're rude. And then two, don't give them much information and say you want to talk to your lawyer. All right, and just say, hey, look, I'm scared. I'm more scared of my lawyer than I am of you. I really can't. I'm not allowed to say anything until I talk to my lawyer. That would be my advice to my kids, okay, when they get old enough that they're driving and going and doing things by themselves is, hey, if you get pulled over, be as polite as possible, hand them your ID, and if they keep asking you questions, say, I'm not allowed to talk to you until I talk to my lawyer.
That's good information to know, and we'll probably all definitely need that. Thinking about back to the presidential side of things, whenever the president puts a law out or tries to enforce something, people kind of look at it and think that it might get immediately charged or something might happen almost immediately. What are the steps that have to go through when a president wants to enforce something statewide?
Okay, good question and a complicated question. And I'm going to do my best to get this correct, but I am not an expert on this area, okay? So my understanding is this, is that the president can sign something called an executive order, okay? That's where he doesn't need Congress's approval to implement whatever it is he's doing. And we've seen, you know, a pardon is an executive order, okay? An executive order is he's repealed some of the things related to the ways you hire and discriminate in the workplace that President Trump has done recently, okay? When we think of laws, we typically think of Congress passing bills and it has to go through a subcommittee and then a committee and then they vote on it and then they pass it, okay? The big topic locally in the state is whether state vouchers are going to get passed, okay? You guys go to a public school, they are potentially saying, okay, we're going to give everybody who applies or some amount of people a scholarship effectively and give them tax dollars to go attend a private school if they want to. And it's a big deal right now, all right? And so they are going through the voting process on that, okay? If we talk about that on a federal level, almost all laws that we are talking about, for example, I think I heard that somebody's trying to pass a law to allow presidents to run for a third term, okay? Mm-hmm. They are presenting that through the regular congressional channels to vote on and to see if it will pass. I don't think it will. It seems unlikely. I think they're trying to make it an amendment to the Constitution, which requires a higher level. And again, this is my very base knowledge of this, but my understanding is that that is the process which a normal bill passes. An executive order is usually not that degree of significance typically.
Yeah. Thank you, Jed, for coming in today. It's always great talking to you, and you know, I learned a lot from it.
I did too.
Yeah. I mean, thank you for coming in. He's a Fulton alumni, and it does a lot for this community. That's Jed McKeon from McKeon Law Group. I'm Maddox here with Tariq on WKCS Knoxville.